goes into the modulator directly. So there's no separate microphone input. I eliminated that on the modulator. Because the modulator is going to be, you know, not going to do anything with it. It's going to be below the desk or on the floor or whatever. It's just a modulator. But now it's wired, so it goes, the audio goes through the transmitter. You see that picture? That's the way I did it.
I gather. All right. Before I run, what transmitter is it?
It's the old Ico 720 with the 730 modulator. You familiar with it?
Ico. I thought that. Did they have a 732 transceiver? I'm trying to remember. I'm lucky I remember where I parked my car.
Yeah, they did. And 732 also.
All right. I can remember where I'm leaving the car. I just parked. All right. In any case, sounds like a fun little project. I'm going to run. Oh, just on a quickie, you mentioned you were going to be able to check the output of the repeater and see if it was running normally. Did you ever get a chance to do that? I was complaining about my reception here at this end of the island.
I'm looking at it right now because I always look at it. It's not too bad. Given the conditions, how are you hearing it where you are?
Well, I parked in a good spot, but 90% of the time I'm hearing it much worse than it's hearing me, and I've got a radio that quiets at about 0.3, squelch pops below 0.2, and I'm putting out 40 watts. So, you know, I understand there are weak spots, but it always seems to favor my transmission rather than my reception. That's why I was just asking about the output.
You're getting into it fine, no problem. Well, the output is minus 73 dBm, which I think it's around that point. Not too bad.
Well, I mean, I don't know what it normally is. So. Anywho, I'm parked. I've got to run into work and punch in by 7:30. So we will catch you later. Thanks for the info. WA2JNF, downtown Brooklyn.
Okay, what's the name deal again? Because I forgot it.
Stu, Sierra Tango Union.
Okay, Stu, got it again. I got to write it down. All right, let you go. You got 15 minutes to get in. Have a good one, WA2CEO.
And to NWS, and to RVP. And to RVP listening. To RVP clear.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL. W2VL repeater.
And to RVP listening. And to RVP QSY 14721.
WB2EAV listening.
Limark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Myself a brand new computer, finally. My video card died, and instead of replacing it again for the second or third time, I'm going to just buy a new computer anyway that I would want it, so I'll do that.
And where are you going to be buying said computer?
Maybe online, maybe at Best Buy, maybe at Micro Center, or maybe someplace else. I'm not sure yet. I'll look around. And I know what I want, basically. You know, nothing fancy. Just something that's going to last. This computer that I'm using was given to me by a friend. Unfortunately, he passed away last year. But he gave it to me, you know, regardless. And I've been using it. It's got one of those gaming video cards, and they're a little bit hard to find, this particular video card, for whatever reason. Although I did find one on eBay the last time it failed, and what's happening is it's overheating. It's getting so hot. There's a fan on this board, this video board, To sort of keep it cool, but it's not keeping it that much cooler. And it's getting so hot that I couldn't even touch it with my fingers. I burnt my finger on it, and that's not good. It shouldn't be getting that hot. So when it reaches a certain temperature, it locks up the computer, and the computer just freezes. Then I got to turn it off, let it cool down, turn it back on. It works. It works for about 5 minutes, and then it freezes again. So I'm not going to bother replacing it again, replacing the video card. Just want to get a whole new motherboard that's faster and that has a solid-state hard drive and a few other pieces that I want. So, and I'll spend the extra money.
All right, so you know what you want. Have you given any thoughts of possibly shopping for CUNs, what you want, maybe on sale or something? Or you, if all else fails, you're not far from Micro Center. That would probably be your best bet.
Yeah, I'll custom make one over there. I'll design one. Because, you know, they're not far, like you said. So it's not a big problem. It's not going to be that much money for a new computer anyway. So I may do that today. It depends how much I get done here with all this stuff. But that's what I'm doing. I'm actually using my laptop to replace my desktop right now. And the laptop works. It's just that it's slower. It's got extra programs on it that I really should get rid of that I'm not using. Slowing it down a bit, but, you know, for what I'm using it for, it's fine. And, as I said, it's not gonna be that much money. So that's my story. Well, right now. Back to you.
All right, understand. All right, sounds good. Are you sure that the problem with the computer isn't just a fan? It sounds to me more like a failure of cooling than anything else. I assume that you would have checked that out first thing.
I did, yeah. No, the fan is spinning. It's not that it's not spinning. It is. But it's just not keeping up with the temperature that's being generated on that board. I mean, there's a massive heatsink on this board, and as I said, it's a gaming board, but it should not get as hot as it's getting. I mean, there's no way that I should have to literally burn my finger just by touching the heatsink. Before, this is not the first time. I have the same board, which I bought it on eBay. I paid like $15-$20 for it to replace the original one that did the same thing. It overheated. It was getting overheated, it was getting hot, and failed. So now it's happening to this one. So and when I replaced it with a new one, it was a lot cooler. I don't know what this temperature is because I didn't measure it, but I could at least, feel it, and you could feel the difference in the temperature. So I'm not sure what's failing on these things, but that's what's happening. And the fan is working.
WB2 ZX Mobile.
Jerry is acknowledged. Let me answer the obvious question, Andy, for after Jerry. Do you use the gaming board? Do you play games that need a high-speed gaming video board? You've never mentioned that, so I'm wondering if you need a damn board. Over to Jerry.
Since WB2ZX Smooth, I guess I'm going to add Andy, actually still morning. Andy, could be your power supply also. Maybe the power supply is not strong enough and it's straining and it's causing things to overheat since you built the computer yourself or something, and wasn't like a factory board or something like that. Also, I would not recommend building your own computer because then you worry about getting and purchasing an operating system for it, because it won't come with an operating system. Then you have to worry about getting all the drivers. And then when something goes wrong, you really can't get back to the manufacturer to, you know, to find out why you get incompatibility with the video board or with something else. So I would recommend getting a name brand computer and what's happening over here. Or this U-Haul truck decided he was not going to the one park one, since he's not allowed on there. So, you know, that's what I would suggest, getting like a name brand computer from Micro Center, rather than, you know, buying the boards and building your own. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, I understand that. I was just going to do it for the fun of it. Just for the challenge. I've the last computer I was using, I built myself from parts that I acquired. It was a new computer. I picked up a motherboard, I picked up a case, a power supply, and I added some things, and that was a number of years ago. It might have been an old 486 or 586. But I guess you know, getting one that's already pre-built and everything, it's fine. I could do that. And no, I did not mention gaming because I'm not a gamer. Nope, I do not play games, Ed. So this is the video board that came with the computer, because the guy that I got it from was a game player. He liked to play games. I don't, so I don't need it. In fact, I don't remember exactly the problem that I had. The first video card that failed, the same card, I did go to Micro Center. I did buy a replacement video card that does not do gaming. I plugged it in, and it did not work on this motherboard, and I don't remember what was wrong. I'm just not sure. I just don't remember what happened, but that board, it was a brand new board, and I forget the name of the connector that's on the board. There's a name for it. It's you gotta give me a list of names of connectors, the types of you know, the card edge connectors that they use on these video boards and on these motherboards, because I forget the names, but it's a special one. And I couldn't even find one on the internet. I had to go to Micro Center, but it did not work. It was not compatible for whatever reason. I don't remember, so I'm not going to run into that dilemma again. Ed.
All right. Well, the bottom line is you should not get a non-gaming substitute. And you don't do gaming, so yeah, if you buy another computer, make sure it does not have high-speed video gaming, because I have a sneaking suspicion that may be a more common problem than we all realize. Also, another question, if you get another computer, I find, getting a computer, Microsoft Office usually adds a lot of money unless you can make some kind of a shortcut somewhere. Do you have any thoughts on that? But over to Jerry first. Meanwhile, Jerry, you're kind of noisy. Where are you?
Here's what you said, tell you where I am. I'm heading towards the repeater now, so I should be okay. Approaching exit 17 on the Bell Parkway. Andy, I think you're thinking of an AGP connector. Video cards originally had an AGP connector, then there was the ISA, ISA for the very old computers, and then there's PCI and PCIe. But you might have had an AGP card that the video card plugged into. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, okay. I'm not familiar with all these different connectors, AGP and ISO and ISA and. I got the video card in my hand, the original one, because I keep it on my desk over here. It's a GeForce 9800 GT V3A, and that's what it's called. This is the other one that went bad. This one only, by the way, it says 512 megabytes, PCI-E. Is that the connector, the PCI connector? What's interesting about this board, it's got a separate Molex plug, or I should say connector. It's not a plug. There's the Molex connector on the front of it is where a plug plugs in from the power supply. So it takes external power rather than, or maybe in addition to, power coming from the card edge connector from the motherboard. It takes external power from the power supply itself. The power supply has a 6-pin Molex connector coming out of it and plugs into this board. So why it needs extra current or extra voltage or whatever is probably because of the speed. That's the difference in this card. The card that I did buy from Micro Center to replace this did not have that connector. Maybe that's the reason why it didn't work. I'm not sure. Ed?
Yeah, well, you know, the power mentioned over here is going to come from somewhere. In a more serious thing, if it's going to be form, fit, function, or, well, wait a minute, you know, the board was much slower speed. So in theory, it did not need that extra power, auxiliary power, but I really know very little about that sort of stuff. But it does remind me of how jamming pods on military planes use so much power that you can't get it out of the aircraft buses, so they have to have their own wind power generators. Have you ever seen a photograph of a military plane with some big thing hanging under the wing with a little tiny propeller in front of it? What that does is it takes the airflow to generate auxiliary power to augment what's coming through the mount from the wing. Jerry, WB2EAV.
Hi, WB2EAV in the group, WB2ZEX Mobile. Andy, I think it would be a 4-pin connector from the power supply, not a 6-pin, like a floppy disk controller or a hard drive pin, one of those. And the old one you're holding in your hand, did it have a fan on the VGA card? Because that's probably what the extra power is for, to power the fan. Comment?
I think that was Charlie, but I'm not sure. I'll give it to you. I heard comment. It's a 6-pin Molex connector. And, yeah, this is the company's NVIDIA. NVIDIA, which is a common name. Everyone's heard of that name. That's the card. No, I don't think that Molex is just for the fan. Probably for some of the other electronics on board. As I said, it's a pretty heavy card because it's got a massive heatsink on it. And again, it's probably used for gaming. By the way, this particular card has two DVI connectors on the back of it. Not VGA, this is DVI. And you know what they are. So the new computer that I will get will have either HDMI or there's another connector. What's the latest that they're using now for your video monitor? And I'm also going to buy a new video monitor also. Because VGA is obsolete. HDMI, I think, is present, current, but there's another connector that they're using. I forget what it's called. So I'll get the latest and greatest. If that was Charlie, over to you.
KD2KNH. Good morning, everybody. It is still morning. Heard a little bit of the conversation sitting on the side, and I heard something about overheating. I actually had that card a while back. But if it was a gaming computer you got from somebody, gamers very frequently overclock their memory. So if you're going to BIOS, and you make sure the memory is set back to where it should be for clock speeds, that may be a cause of overheating if it was for the system in general. I'll sit on the side, guys. I don't know who gets it next.
I didn't tell you who to give it to. Give it to Ed, sorry. WB2EAV, go ahead.
You know, Charlie does have an interesting point. It's certainly worth a quick check anyway. And, Jeff, who knows? It might save you a lot of hassle. Certainly it's worth a quick check. Meanwhile, Jerry, you are very noisy, so you say you're heading towards the repeater. Then it's almost like the repeater heard you and said, okay, because ever since then you've been full quiet. Over to Jerry.
You're also very noisy into the repeater, because the repeater's coming in full quiet in here with the S-meter, but you also have not the strongest signal into it, I don't know. I don't know what that other connector is, Andy. I know there's the DVI, the HDMI, where I thought the HDMI would be the newest, but I don't know if there's one after that. That I couldn't tell you. And VGA, of course, is, still being used. I mean, sometimes it comes on the motherboard. You know, sometimes you get a computer that has the VGA on the motherboard, and they'll put an external card in, and they'll bypass the VGA on the motherboard. You know, you'll get a computer that has a plastic cover over the connector reminding you not to use it because it's disabled in the BIOS. I have an NVDIA, whatever that card was, somewhere around. I think I picked up a spare one that's sitting in a box. But 512 memory is little for that card. Usually they're, in meg, 4 meg, and bigger, or gig on some of those video cards. You got an old card if you only have 512 on the video memory, so I don't know. But, you're still better off getting a name brand computer, I think, rather than, you build your own, you got to buy a case, you got to get a motherboard, then you got to get the cards, right? You got to get a hard drive, you got to get a CD, a DVD burner, then you got to get the operating system and download all the drivers for the motherboard and hope it all works. You get a system that has it all built in, there are your drivers, and you're ready to go. Go ahead, Andy.
Okay, WA2CGL. Yeah, but you know me, I like the challenge of figuring things out and making things work. Yeah, and by the way, I do hear the static, which was on the TechNet again last night. I gotta make a phone call and see if I could look into what's going on. With the static situation, so I do hear that. Now it's, 'cause I always listen to myself, and now it disappeared. So, by the way, Ed, if you were listening on the TechNet, so I'm continuing my discussion of transmission lines, and we were talking a little bit about VSWR, and how standing waves are formed along the transmission line, along the coax cable, when a line is terminated in a different impedance other than its own characteristic impedance. So, and that's, and there's, unfortunately, there were many diagrams that you had to look at in this book that I'm reading it from, and I can't convey that information to have to look at things that it shows. So it's a little bit hard to describe word for word what I'm actually looking at as far as a visualization of a waveform, of a standing wave for, a standing wave on a coax cable. But I got to get that concept across somehow, if you know what I mean. It's not easy. I was trying to figure it out as I was going along, and I just didn't come up with a solution. So I sort of jumped ahead. But let me just let it drop a second. Stand by. Again, and I've said this a number of times, the whole reason, and I'm mentioning this to you, Ed, is because of a QST article that talks about using transmission lines of different lengths and impedances to match impedances. It's about impedance matching, which is the general topic. But I figured before I get into that, you have to understand transmission lines in the first place, and what happens when a line is terminated or unterminated, open, shorted, all that stuff. So that was my basic idea of getting into that discussion, which I'm still talking about. So I just thought I'd bring you up to date, Ed, and just let you know that. So that was the discussion last night. And to be continued. Because it's a very interesting topic, you know, DSW war and all that stuff. It's important because you want to transfer your maximum power to your load, and that's the bottom line. You want to get the maximum efficiency. So to keep it that way, you got to, you know, make sure things are met. Ed, back to you.
I'm Paul. Something I want to say, but am I missing the repeater okay from this parking spot?
You are.
Yeah, by the way, Jerry, when you said I was noisy, I was going past the Wyandanch train station, so I'm not in the slightest bit surprised. I came in late. I did hear that part. I didn't see any reason to join in. I was toying with saying something, but it never worked out that way. Saying, if you ever watch a river with rapids, they have standing waves, and if you look at a standing wave in rapids, where an underground, you know, a rock at the bottom of a river causes a wave that does not move, it kind of gives you a mechanical analog of a standing wave on a coax line. But like I said, that never came up. And, you know, you were finishing up at the time. Any comment? And now I'm going to go in.
Yeah, well, that's why they call it standing, because it gives the appearance that the wave is not moving, even though the wave is traveling along the line. And, of course, the phase difference, as I mentioned, between the reflected and forward wave causes cancellations depending on the phase. So those individual phases are constantly changing as the forward wave and the reflected wave join together at a certain point, which we call either a node or a loop. And I guess that's an engineering term. A loop is a peak and a node is a valley as it goes through its cycle. The whole thing is an interesting concept, you know, in general, as I keep saying. But I understand what you're saying. I was visualizing this. If you take a rope and tie one end to a fixed point, and now you take the rope and you wave the rope up and down, move it quickly with your hand, you'll see a wave being generated on that line, on that rope, and it'll move down the line. There's actually a video of that also, which gives a good indication of how a wave travels, you know, using that that idea. Also, you know, regarding water, and I remember Dick mentioned this, if you throw a rock into a water, you'll see the ripple effect moving outward from the point that the rock hits the water in a circle. If you throw a second rock a short time later, you'll see a second wave or ripple effect, and you'll notice that they don't add or subtract to each other, from each other. They override each other. One wave will actually go higher than as they meet. They don't join up. They just they have no interaction whatsoever directly, if you know what I mean. And there's a visual example of also you know how things the laws of physics work with regarding waves. Ed, for your comments on that, and then I'll let you go.
Yes, I understand that completely. And I almost was going to say the same thing about a rope. It's a little bit tricky, but you can get the standing waves in there. All right, I'm here. I got to go in. Everybody have a very good day. Haven't heard from Jerry in a while. You take it. WB2ZEX, WB2EAV, and Deer Park is clear.
KG2T, good morning.
Hey, Joe, it's been a while. Got her on, though.
Okay, Ed, we'll talk to you later. Good to hear you. Hello, Andy. Hello, Jerry.
Hey, Joe, how you doing? Howard Finks, good to hear you again. I know we heard you a couple of weeks ago. Good to hear you back. Let me just give it to Jerry since Ed is signing, and I think Charlie signed also. So Jerry, back to you, and then give it to Joe.
Hi, it's WB2ZX. Good morning, Joe. I haven't heard you in ages. Andy, if you want to get to a bigger audience with your discussion, you can write an article for the log, for the October log, and this way you can reach 350-something people. All right, good, Joe. Take a full turn.
All right. How you doing, guys? Jerry, at least you and I think last time I spoke to you was a long time ago. Maybe even before I went to Florida, which was like last December. But, I've been sick, but doing better, and it's coming along. I'm halfway through my treatment, Andy, so I have until December to go, but coming along, feeling a little bit better each day, so taking it one day at a time. How you been, Andy?
Okay, Joe, yeah, good to hear you again. Yes. Yeah, I know, what you've been going through, so... That's good. You sound fine. You sound good. So that's a good thing. The truth is I don't even know what kind of audience I have listening to what I'm talking about. Trying to get some of these concepts across. I'm assuming I have a few people out there, but I don't think I have that many. I think most of the time it would just... be boring or, things of that nature. Some of the subjects, anyway. Maybe the space report gets a bigger audience, what I'm looking for, that's the word, bigger audience. I'm not sure. But, look, I'm trying this out to see how it's working out. I mean, there's so much stuff out there as far as, if you opened up the Radio Amateur's Handbook and just start reading chapter by chapter, you could spend a lifetime just talking about all these different, aspects of this hobby, as far as the technical end of it, and then some. Now we're into the digital end of it, so that's even a whole new chapter, and that always involves. All right, let me see, Ed signed, so Jerry, back to you.
This is WB2ZEX. Yeah, I'm not sure how many, if they still do a check-in, because I have an ArisNet for the city that's on at 8 o'clock on Sunday from like 8 to 8:20-ish or something like that. So I don't know if they still do a check-in or on the TechNet like Dick used to do, or they just basically anyone who's listening is just listening. So otherwise you'd get an idea of how many people actually signing in. I know it used to be, you'd sign in and then you'd say you have a question and eventually you'll get called or you'll just sign in. So I don't know if they still do that. But once again, if you want to get a captive audience of maybe 350 people, you can write an article. Some people will read it, some people will read only part of it, some people may just ignore it, but at least you'll know that it got out. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially if the heading and the first few lines make it very interesting, then people will continue reading it. I read the log all the time. Some of it is repetitive, but still, I've been enjoying it for the last 40 and some years. Anyway, but by the way, Andy, I don't know if you know, but you remember Emil Russo with RPI? Was that the name of the company? I forget, but I'm sure you remember the guy. He used to work with me at KC Systems. He passed away about a month ago. Do you remember him, Andy?
No. Emil Russo. Did I know him? And he's sorry he passed away. Could you just give me some details? Was he a ham? Because I it doesn't ring a bell right now. Give me some more information.
Emil was a communication engineer and did a lot of work for us when I was at KC Systems with New York City Transit.
Did he work for New York City Transit at one point? Did he work directly for them? There is an Emil that I remember. I got all the static again. That's the repeater, that's static. There's a guy named Emil that I saw last year. He works in the radio shop at New York City Transit. And I think he also worked for maybe Barry Electronics or something. Is that the same guy that you're talking about? Because I'm not sure.
KE2AM Z-Mobile.
AMZ, you recognize. Hang on a second, please. No, Andy. Emil worked for KC Systems in Hicksville and also, let's see, in Syosset. But when KC shut down, he went to work for PRI in the Massapequa, I think, or someplace, Belmore, Lindenhurst, someplace on the South Shore. Now, he never worked directly for Transit, but, with PRI as well as KC Systems, you know, he did a lot of work, especially in radio and communications for New York City Transit. All right. Let's see, AMZ, pick it up and then give it over to Andy.
Thank you. Hey, Andy, this is Mike. I just wanted to let you know, National Grid or PSA&G actually got in touch with me, and they sent the radio sniffer guy who actually knows what he's talking about to my house. He said they traced the RFI to a burnt out lightning arrestor that's screaming, and that also could explain why my air conditioning system blew up. There must have been a lightning strike in my neighborhood during the storm, which blew out my air conditioning and also blew out the lightning arrestor, which is now causing the corona. Copy that, Andy?
Oh, okay, that's interesting. I didn't know they had lightning arrestors located. You might let me know where that is. So they fixed that problem. Okay, yeah, that would have been a little bit hard to figure out. Okay, without knowing the actual infrastructure. Okay, and thanks for that. Joe, I mean, I know the name, but it goes back so far. How old was he, by the way, just to find out his age? You said he passed away. Was he a young guy, or was he up there in years, Joe?
Okay, we're leaving Jerry out. Jerry, I hope you don't mind. Emil must have been, I'm going to guess now, probably mid to late 60s. And I know you knew of him because about 10 years ago or so, when I worked at KC Systems, you had run into Emil on one of the projects that you two were involved with, not together, but indirectly, for New York City Transit. All right. We're leaving Jerry out, so Andy, that's about all I can say at this point. And give it over.
This is WB2ZX Mobile. I'm looking at the old Petco in on Hempstead Turnpike, and it looks like part of the roof blew off during the hurricane. The building's empty now anyway, but there are like sheet metal pieces just sitting there, ripped off from the roof. So I don't know. So I guess that did some damage over there. Go ahead, Andy. Nothing else to add to the conversation, so pick it up again. I'm I'm just like 5 minutes from my stop anyway. I got to stop by the post office and see how many members have renewed, and so I can take care of the membership card. So, W82CDL, get it? W82ZX Mobile.
Okay, Jerry, didn't mean to leave you out. Just was kind of curious. My memory is not that good anymore, so I'm just thinking back, Joe, what you said as far as I know the name. I don't remember what he looks like. I don't have any visualization of that, and I don't remember what we did if we worked together, like you said, or had some something in, that we were discussing maybe or talking about. And I guess that was yeah, that's what I was doing, police radio, not the project I'm on now, but the earlier project. Okay, well, I'm sorry to hear that he passed away. I didn't know he was in his late 60s, and I guess he was not a ham. And let me give it back to Mike first. Let me just see Mike, and okay on them finding the problem. So that's a good thing. Mike, I'll give it back to you. Give it back to Joe after you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Joe. Jerry, anyways, yeah, Andy, so I figured out a thing. I'm driving to Harbor Freight now. I just want to get a little pump. Andy, Forester question. I know you just bought a brand new Forester. Mine is 13 years, you know, it's a 2013. And I noticed a knock in my engine. You know, and I did some research, and they said, you know, maybe you might want to dump some high-octane gas into it. It could be some pre-ignition. I changed my oil religiously, you know, as per, you know, no more than 10,000 miles with the new oils. Your brand-new spankin' Forester, Andy, how quiet is the engine? Because I got over 100,000 miles on mine. How is yours?
Okay, I'll answer that. First of all, to clarify, I have an Outback. I don't have a Forester, which is a different vehicle, as you probably know. And how quiet is it? I don't know how you describe quiet of an engine. I mean, it's pretty quiet. I don't hear any knocks. Is that like knocks that's consistent with low octane? Where you'll hear a knocking and pinging sound that they used to call. I'm assuming that's what you're referring to. When you hear a knock. I don't, you know, I'm just using regular gas as required, and I don't hear anything. I only have 8,000 miles on my engine since I bought the car last year. And you have a lot more than me, so. I guess they call it a boxer engine. I think they haven't really changed that design, I don't think. Too much. I have something I could tell you about my car, which just recently occurred, which was partially my fault, if you want to hear that story. Actually, I'm going to fix that today. It's something I got to fix on the car, so I could go into that discussion. But before I do that, Joe, let me give it back to you since Mike gave it back to me. Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, man, KD2O, Judy Noble.
Okay, OGB, you recognize. Hold on a second. I'll let you pick it up. All right, Andy. I'm going to sign out, too. No, I'm inside on an HD. I want to get going with those few things I got to do. And by the way, I have not been on the radio because I bought a new car about a month ago. I got a new Lexus. And I haven't had time yet to put the antenna in the car. So that's why also I have not been on. Also, the way I've been feeling, I have not been driving much at all. All right, guys, take care. And I don't have much to add about knocking on the engine. I've been lucky. I always have a fairly new car all the time. OGB, you take it and give it to AMC. This is KG2T. I'll be clear. So long.
KG2T out of the group. AMZ Andy is asking how quiet your engine is. Basically, how quiet does it idle, basically, when you're not moving? That's probably what he's asking. Like, usually the hybrids probably tend to be very quiet, but that's what he's asking.
That was exactly what I had in mind. I was kind of talking more about engine knock. But anyways, it could be octane. I just added some octane boost, which I had sitting around there, guys, which brings it up about 30 points. So I have a tank full of 87. So that's going to bring it up to like, just about 98, 99, something like that. And I want to see if that clears it up. And it could also be carbon deposits, which I might have to clear out. Or I might have to actually start adding Lucas oil to the mix because I got 100,000 plus miles. Andy?
All right, really good. First of all, coming to you, Joe. And, take it easy, and you're sounding good. We'll talk to you again if you're still listening. Let me just see. Jerry, are you still there? I forgot if Jerry signed. Let me give it to him.
I think Jerry signed, Andy.
Okay, it shows how much I'm paying attention. You've got to write these things down. All right, very good. I don't have any issues with any knocks on my engine, but mine's just a baby compared to yours being a few years old. I will say, here's an interesting problem that I created without realizing it, and I think you'd find it kind of interesting. I was using my cigarette lighter plug to power the one of my ham radios, and unfortunately I burnt out the particular cigarette lighter that's built into the car, the cigarette lighter, not plug, but jack, that holds the cigarette lighter itself. I was using that to power a radio, and what I did not know, which I found out, is that jack has a built-in thermal sensor that measures the thermal fuse, actually, that measures current, and also, I guess, temperature was a thermal fuse, and it went bad. I was throwing too much current through the cigarette lighter. There is a 10-amp fuse in the fuse box, which also which is obviously used for in case you're drawing too much current. But I found out about this thermal fuse. But in doing so, I went into the fuse box for the first time, and I noticed that some of the fuses were installed upside down. So instead of it being like I'm looking at the numbers on the fuse, because the fuse ampere rating is labeled. In other words, a 20-amp fuse showed 02 instead of 20 because it was upside down. So, common sense told me, okay, remove these fuses and turn them around so they could read correctly so I'll know what amperage it is. Even though I guess I was just being meticulous in this case. Let me let it drop because I just want to tell you what happened. I had this in the back of my mind all along, but I just ignored my own thoughts. And I knew that if you remove a fuse, especially to a computer circuit that's built into the vehicle, you may cause a reset function to occur when you put the fuse back in. So, like, it's almost like, resetting a computer, which is exactly what happened when it came to opening and closing the windows of my vehicle. Your vehicle is probably set up, too, and if you have a Forester, I'm sure it's the same thing. To open up your window, you just momentarily flick the switch. You push down or pull up momentarily, and the window goes up and down by itself. Well, in this case, because I removed the fuse, one of the fuses that was upside down, and restored power, now you have to hold that button in to lower the window, or you have to pull it up and hold it up to close the window. It's no longer momentary. You have to hold it. So I found out in the manual, it tells you how to reset that function, which I'm going to do. And there's a little bit of a sequence to that to bring it back, to restore it to its original configuration. So I just thought I'd tell you that some of the fuses that operated the computer, the main computer for the car, I did not touch. Because I said, if I remove power, and also it's the same thing by removing the battery. So if you remove the battery of these new vehicles, you're going to restore or reconfigure what's originally configured, and the engine may do things that you don't want it to do and operate differently and so on. I guess you're aware of that. That's the way these new cars are designed. So you got to be a little bit careful when it comes to removing power to different parts of your car. Mike, I just thought I'd mention that. Back to you, WHCDM.
Thank you. Didn't forget about you, Craig. Yes, that is an absolute fact. But good news, Andy. Once you restore it, the car will reprogram itself. It might take a couple hundred miles worth of driving, and you have to do some highway driving, too, 55 miles an hour plus for a certain period of time. But good news, the computer will reprogram itself to optimize your engine again. And I have a thing which I plug into the OBD2 port, which is a battery keeper. So if you ever got to kill power, you plug that thing into the OBD2 port, and your computer does not lose its memories.
It's called a keep-alive memory. That's what it is. You got to get one of those keep-alive memory keepers. It's basically an external battery that you plug into the port, and then you plug it into any 12-volt source, and then when you move the battery, it doesn't lose the keep-alive memory. That's what you're referring to.
That is correct, Craig, but it does a little bit more. It goes right straight to the computer. It does not go through the fuse box and all this other kind of stuff. It's a handy little tool. Highly recommend it there, Andy. I keep one in the back of my car all the time.
What does this thing cost? And which port does it plug into? Is it a diagnostic port that you're talking about, you know, underneath the dashboard? Is that where it plugs into? And how much is it?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And you get them on eBay for like about $8, some ridiculous, something like that. You go to like any of these auto parts stores and they charge you a ridiculous amount of money. I got them on eBay for a whole $8.
Oh, that's a good thing to have. I heard a horror story about the guy lost power to his AM/FM radio, and I believe that's what it was, and his GPS navigation system, that whole configuration changed, and he had to restore that, and there was a whole sequence to it. Especially the navigation part of it, because I have, because I have that built in, as you know. So I have Sirius XM, and I have, I forget what maps they use. Is it Magellan? I forget what. It's not Google Maps. I know there's some firmware upgrades also, but if you lose that memory, if you lose power. Then I heard a case where it was a nightmare to restore it, to bring it back in one case, and I forget where I heard it. So, something to keep in mind, which, again, I had in the back of my mind, but I sort of ignored it when I simply turned the fuses around so they all line up so I can actually read the value. I don't know why the manufacturer decided to put some fuses in right side up and some fuses upside down, and this was both in the engine compartment and the dashboard, because there's two fuse boxes. Mike, back to you.
Thank you, Andy. Yes, that's called laziness, plain and simple. The guy happened to be standing one direction, and another guy was standing. That's called laziness. But yes, it can be a nightmare. All these electronic systems can be a nightmare. You got to get the keeper. And your radio code, you might even have to go to the dealership to restore your radio, because your radio will be locked out. It's a nightmare. Go ahead, Greg.
82 GB Mobile, exit 43 on Sunrise, westbound. Here's something that once happened to my car. Last year, when I was at work and I went off to lunch, literally right